They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax. Joining me today is a lady who, at one point in her life, decided that she would stick daisies in the barrels of cop guns. But now she wants to help outlaw all associations. And for that, I'm grateful to have her on our side, Shelley Marshall. Shelley, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, and I want to thank you for the work that you do, Sue, and giving us a platform at Homeowner Advocates, a platform to reach out and help other people that are becoming victims of this HOA monster.
So you have got, you've got a million different websites. And you've got a million different advocacies that you have going and a different ways of sort of reaching out and helping people. You're a published author.
Yes.
In addition to all of the other stuff, but you've got a brand new website, and that's why you're here today to talk about that.
The new website is called hoalawyer.org, and one of the reasons myself, attorney Adam Buck, and property manager David Russell put it together was because we constantly get calls from people who are wanting to pursue legal action against their association, wondering how they can protect their rights, keep their homes, stop foreclosure, all kinds of issues where they want to turn to the courts first and foremost. And that is probably the worst way to go when you're in an HOA, because all of the legal tools are stacked against the homeowner at this time in our country. And they don't realize how dangerous and risky it is, most of them, to actually try and enforce the CC&Rs and the rules that boards are coming up with. So we wanted to have a website where we could send people so they could read about what risks they're taking and what the different avenues might be for them.
You have somebody who's an advocate of ADR and a manager. You're on your website, and they have very different views and opinions. I think what I've been seeing lately, and especially in Virginia, and there's some key cases out there where the homeowner has won, and the homeowner has won big. And the reason for that is because the attorney that's representing them is actually aware of the laws. And I think that's the big, big, big problem right there, is the attorneys who are willing to take on the homeowner's cases for the homeowner don't know beans about HOA law.
Oh, is that the truth? And that's one of the reasons we have we're starting to look at attorneys. I know Ward Lucas is also attorneys that are familiar with the law and willing to actually represent the homeowner so that they have some type of a chance.
I know that we've had a number of cases here in Fairfax County, and I've actually gone and sat in on the cases just to observe, just as an observer. And I've said this on the show before,
The attorneys representing the HOA typically seem to be the attorneys that are picked out by the insurance companies, and they are awful.
Yes, they don't understand the ins and outs of what's happening in the whole system right now.
But one of the attorneys sat there and dared to tell the judge that the governing documents were a living document. You didn't really have to take the covenants, the declaration seriously. I thought the judge was going to dive over the bench and just go for her throat.
I have never heard of that. That shows you how little they know.
That's a living document, but this one was the one who was representing the HOA. This was the attorney that was hired, who was hired by the insurance company to protect the HOA. That HOA lost, and they lost big time.
And they should have lost.
They did. But the homeowner won. And I think one of the things that I've seen as well is that the homeowner needs to be their own advocate, and they need to do their own research and make sure that their attorney is doing a good job.
That is one of the biggest problems we have, is that an owner wants to find an attorney who knows what they're doing and hand it all over to the attorney or hand it all over to the advocate. And they don't realize how much work they have to do on their own behalf if they're going to take on an association. They have to research the laws. They have to research their documents. They have to know what's happening in other states, who's winning, who's losing, how the courts are looking at things. And it takes so much time and so much energy that, you know, more than 90% of the homeowners are not going to do it. They're not going to put their home at risk, their savings, their retirement. They put all of those things at risk when they try to enforce the documents and state law.
Is it, you know, there might be a reason to put together something that would give the homeowners a step-by-step on what they need to do. And I think the biggest one is do your homework, because what goes in your HOA may not go in the one next door to you, because
that's
they
exactly
may have
right.
different documents.
And the different state laws, they're so different. I mean, you go from one state to another, you don't know what laws that you have that protect you. I thought in Utah that we would have an anti-slap law where attorneys couldn't go after people to shut them up in these HOA quasi-governments. And some of the states do have that protection for a homeowner. So, but Utah doesn't. It stops at the local government level and doesn't extend to the HOA government. So that when my association sued me and 100 other John Does for emotional distress that we caused the board owners because we asked questions. I mean, the board, because we asked questions.
Which is ridiculous.
It was legal. Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous. And it shuts people up. It scares them. And I understand why. So it's different from in every single state. Some states, you'll have an anti-slap law that will protect you so that your association can't sue you for things like that. Other states, most states, do not have that protection.
You would not believe, yeah, you would, because I'm sure you get the same thing. How many people have contacted me and told me they're being sued for $1 million for having said something negative about the board or the association or the manager, whatever. These lawsuits are settled with a gag order.
Yes.
Which means that you have no idea. They'll say it was settled in my favor, but I can't tell you the details. And that, you know, Shelley, that's another one of my big bugaboos. If you're going to be using the association money, even if it's insurance money, if you're using the association money to buy somebody's silence, there is something so very wrong with that.
Oh, there really is. But what's happened is it's become such a cash cow. There is so much money in this for the attorneys and for the managers that they're taking it to the nth degree. And there's going to be a horrible backlash at some time, but the backlash isn't going to come until the money is taken out of it for the attorneys who keep this type of thing going on, you know, gagging people, shutting them up, using the court system as a huge club over the head of the homeowner so that they won't enforce documents. They'll just be quiet because they're so afraid of losing everything.
I think that we ought to do away with the gag orders in HOAs. I mean, if you and I sue each other and we decide that we're going to settle this and one of us agrees to pay the other one, if you want a gag order, I have no problem with that because it's our money that's being used. I mean, even if you say, well, it's not the HOA money, it's the insurance money, you know what? Your premiums are going to go up. It is the homeowner's money.
It's the homeowner's money. That's correct. And the homeowners, what they're forced to do is sue their neighbors. They don't even know that they're suing their neighbors because we're all business partners in these HOAs. So the board makes a decision to go after somebody, to sue them, to punish them, to use the court system as a weapon against another homeowner. The other homeowners don't even know that it's happening and that they're suing their neighbor. And if they knew, if they had all the information, would they agree to go sue so-and-so down the street because they have a $7 penalty that's gone up into $13,000? If they had the information, they're likely not to want to put the association at risk and just simply not to want to sue their neighbor over a $7 penalty, which is something that I just read about yesterday. A man's $7 penalty ballooned into $13,000. It's absolutely outrageous. In Utah, in our association, we're looking at amending our documents to say that the board cannot sue a member of the association without the permission of the members of the association. In other words, put it on the ballot, put it to a vote, full disclosure. This is what the person is doing. This is why we want to sue them. Do you agree? And that way, you're not suing your neighbor without your consent.
Your money's not going to the... One of the great success stories that I absolutely love and I just keep talking about on this show is the Ferran case. And what they did was they gutted their HOA. So the HOA exists. How did they do that? They sued their HOA. The HOA sued back. They sued again. I mean, it went on for years. That's one of the cases where I went and sat in court and listened, and it might have been that case where the attorney says, oh, this is just a living document. We don't have to take it verbatim. Oh, really? So anyway, the Ferrans won, and they won, and they countersued, and they won. And, it just went on for many, many years. And in Virginia, the prevailing party is entitled to costs and fees, reasonable fees, and they were awarded every penny that they asked for. They bankrupted the HOA. HOA didn't have any money. And the HOA said, hey, we're going to file bankruptcy so we don't have to pay them. And the judge said, oh, no, you don't. So it actually cost a couple of the board members quite a bit of money personally to pay it off. Mm-hmm. The only common asset they had was a one-acre strip of grass. And so they put that up for sale to make the money to pay the Ferrans. A developer was interested, wanted to build townhouses. The homeowners decided they didn't want that. So that's when it cost the two of the board members a chunk of money, and they paid the Ferrans, and so the Ferrans got their money back. The one-acre lot was left there. So the homeowners who had been fighting each other, I mean, they didn't have a clue as to what was going on. The Ferrans weren't allowed in the meetings. I mean, it was just your typical war zone.
They finally got together. They decided that to extinguish the association would have been a little difficult. So they left the association there. They have that 1 acre, so they are allowed to charge to maintain that 1 acre. It's the only common asset they have.
Right.
But they amended their governing documents, and almost everyone, I mean, they had more than they needed, agreed that they didn't want any covenants. They didn't want an architectural control committee. They didn't want the board to have the authority to find them. They didn't want the board to be able to do this, that, and the other. So there were nothing was left there to cause
that
problems.
That is wonderful. I wish more HOAs could do that.
Which is why I keep talking about it, because that's the only way. I mean, somebody's going to say, well, what if somebody paints their front door red? So what? You know, grow up, people. A red door's not going to hurt you. But here's the other thing, Shelley. What happened when they gutted the association, the powers of the association, no covenants, no nothing?
Mm-hmm.
All the homeowners started making these improvements to their houses.
Oh,
and property.
Right, an unintended consequence, which turned out to be a good one.
Well, property values went up because one of the lawsuits was that the Ferrand's roof was leaking. And the board said that they had to replace it with the identical tile. Well, the problem is they don't make the identical tile. So they found something as close as they possibly could, and the board wouldn't approve it. So they had this leaky roof that was causing damage to the interior of the house. So when they finally won all of their cases, they sort of remodeled the house, built a deck that they weren't allowed to build. You know, it just turned things around dramatically. So all of a sudden, everybody started being friends with them, coming over. They were bringing them baskets of flowers and bottles of wine and cakes and cheese and all of these things, thanking them for what they had done, because now they felt that they too could make improvements to their homes,
right,
which they did.
Without having somebody breathe down their neck.
Yeah, tell them, no, you can't do that, or that's the wrong shade of pale, or, you know, the wrong shade of white that you're using. Oh, you know, I mean, you know all the idiotic things these morons come up with. When it snowed, somebody hired a plow to come through and plow their streets. It was a small association. And went around the neighborhood with a hat and said, how do you want to contribute? So people were just chucking in $20 bills, $30 bills. That's how they managed to get things done, but it was the neighbors.
When people are forced to work together like that, I mean, when they have to work together, when there's no formal board making those decisions and forcing people will work together. I've lived in a lot of communities where we've taken care of our trash collectively. We've taken care of the roads. There's always one or two people who won't do it, who won't contribute. That's just the way of the world, and you just put up with it. And the ones who do, you thank them, and you get along, and you become a real community instead of having a board and attorneys and the courts come in and take it over for you, destroying the community, pitting one member against another.
You become a community, and you just said it. Because otherwise it's a war zone.
In Alaska, they did a wonderful thing where they gutted an HOA. And this is one of my favorite stories.
Okay.
And they had a subdivision there, and some people came in, I believe from California, and they decided, well, we are going to enforce these covenants, and we're going to do this. You know, people hadn't paid much attention before in this rural Alaskan subdivision. And so they were starting the infighting, pitting neighbor against neighbor. And finally, some of the people had it, and they got together. They called together a members meeting, and they had the members vote not to have another board meeting for 20 years. Everybody voted on it. No board meeting for 20 years, and that took care of it for the next 20 years.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. But the HOA still exists.
It still exists, but they're not allowed to have a board meeting. And, you know, legally, you're not allowed to discuss HOA business except at a board meeting. So it took all the teeth out of the people wanting to control their neighbors.
I like that. I like that a lot. And I think that once things like that happen, I mean, when you're told that this is the way you do it, you report your neighbor, you spy on your neighbor, and all of a sudden every tiny little thing becomes a major, major problem issue. And you don't have to confront the neighbor. You can just, you know, anonymously report them. And the thugs in the association will just jump on it and start doing that. Shelley, here's another story, and this is so illustrative of what happens typically in an HOA. In my HOA, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, whenever it was that I got on the board, there were these two ladies who were neighbors and had been neighbors for years. Two older single women.
Mm-hmm.
They'd been friends, they'd been neighbors, and they'd get together every day. And one of them would go to the other one with a letter from the association that she had been reported, that it had been reported that she was doing whatever. It was a cease and desist letter. And she'd show it to her friend, and the friend, who would do a thing like that? These two biddies were reporting each other and then going to each other for comfort, trying to figure out who the hell was. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. These were best friends reporting each other.
And that's the kind of atmosphere that we get when we're policing our neighbors and deciding that what we want in a neighborhood is what everybody else should want, and that what seems best for us is what I'm going to impose on Joe down the street with his family. It takes away so much of the caring and the concern. In communities where there are people who have health issues, or there's been an accident, or their kid is in a lot of trouble, and suddenly they can't pay their dues or contribute like they used to because of extreme hardship in the home, the homeowners association after these people, instead of giving them latitude, instead of banding together and helping them, they're going after them. And I just don't understand how people justify this in their own minds. Like those two biddies, how do they justify going after each other?
Because this is what we have created. By creating these associations, this is the environment that we have created.
Yes, it is. And that's what I want to be a part of, the solution to help uncreate that. But it's difficult being an advocate because of the situation, because somebody will get in power in the board and then go after the members who challenge or question or want copies of the report. Suddenly you become the enemy. Why are you the enemy? The egos involved, the people that have too much time on their hands, that get on the board. The most qualified people to be on the boards are the ones who are too busy to do it.
It's the ones who don't want it.
That's right.
It's the ones who don't want it, and they make the best board members. But the collateral damage of what we have created, residential America. I don't like calling them communities because there's, you know, words have meaning, and a community is, by definition, something where people have a lot in common. And the fact that you live there does not make it a community.
That's true.
And so I really resent the use of the word community, but then you have the special interests who have termed all of the words that we use to define what's going on. And they've used words that sound benign and pleasant and nice.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not. So I think
step one is to stop calling them communities.
Oh, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought about using that, but that's true. When our members got together to fight against a board that was more or less attacking the members, one of the things they kept saying was, let's put the unity back in the community.
I like that.
You know, using those, yeah, it was wonderful. It came up from one of our members, and she made a big sign, and she put it over in the field that wasn't on the community ground, because on the community ground, the board wouldn't allow anybody to put any signs up except what they wanted. So she made a great big sign, put the unity back in community, and had it in the field across the road. It was beautiful, but it was a great sentiment.
You know, it's not just within the confines of the association. The damage sort of seems to spill over into mm-hmm. the outer. The outer community, whether it's the schools or next door or the church or anywhere else that the members come in. I heard from a young mother who's been having a lot of problems, and she invited her 10-year-old son's entire class and the teacher to a spring barbecue. Nobody responded, including the teacher. Nobody showed up, including the teacher. They just totally ignored it. And this kid was heartbroken. He was just absolutely devastated because his parents or his mother was having problems with the HOA.
Sure, she was probably asking for records.
No, they were going after her because her trash can was visible.
Oh.
I mean, as idiotic as it gets, her trash can was visible. She said it wasn't. They put, they planted bushes and things, shrubs to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not visible. But they went after her. She has a disability. I told her to file a fair housing claim against it. And, of mm-hmm. course, the pros for doing that is that it is free. Well, I mean, your incredibly high taxes pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But the cons are they take forever. I mean, like anything else the government's involved in, it's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So while this is going on, the whole family is suffering.
Going after members like that and trying to discredit them is another tool. You have the legal tool that's used against them with the attorneys and the court systems and shutting people up and making them afraid of putting their homes at risk. And then you have board members who will actually go after the character of the members, all the while saying that the members are going after the board, which, you know, they start accusing the members of doing the very things that they are doing themselves. I've seen that so often. And that's another reason for putting up HOA lawyer website. We talk about the federal and state agencies where you can go and possibly get help if you fall into certain categories. And like you said, it's free. But then you make yourself an enemy of the state, so to speak, an enemy of the HOA. And they do turn on you. That's another reason for taking the money out of it, taking the power out of it, and turning it into just neighbors looking after each other, which is what they were intended to be in the first place.
Well, let's be honest about it, Shelley. The real reason we have all these HOAs is to give local municipal governments a free pass on their taxes. They don't have to take care of anything. I mean, people think that it's there to protect them, and that HOAs protect their property values. They don't. You know,
oh, they don't.
They don't. I mean, it's the big lie.
But one of the biggest selling points for real estate right now is no HOA. It's one of the biggest selling points. And real estate people who are not trained in HOA law, so many of them don't understand the dangers. They just want to sell a home. And they don't realize that what they're selling, a liability to people who are looking for homes. It's such a huge liability. And people who are buying homes, the real estate people themselves, they do not understand what the danger is. They don't understand what they're getting into. They've been sold a bill of goods, and they've bought into it. I have a relative who's a real estate agent, and she and her husband were buying a home down in Florida, and it was in an HOA, and I sat down, I said, you listen to me. and I said, this is what you're looking at. This is your liability. This is your risk. This is what you could face. And she was horrified. And she's a real estate agent.
Yeah.
And she said, I did not know that. I said, well, you know it now. And they actually did not buy the home, and they bought one not inside an HOA. And I am so grateful. I saved one person.
It's the story of the woman who's walking down the beach, and she sees all these starfish that are washed ashore. And she starts picking them up, throwing them back into the ocean. And somebody says, you'll never save them all. She says, nope, but I'll save this one, and I'll save this one, and I'll save that one.
Right.
And so one at a time. But if there are more people like you, we'll get more of them saved. But no, it's true. And I've had realtors contact me and say, shoo, I sold this home. And now the HOA is going after my clients, and they're mad at me for having sold them this place. Can you help me?
And you can't, because once they've signed on the dotted line, they've signed away their constitutional property rights.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You can help them. Maybe you can, because most people don't realize that if it's not specifically in the governing documents, in the declaration, the association doesn't have that power. I've sat there at, you know, and talked to people, and they've gone, well, we're going to do this. I go, but you can't do that. Well, yes, we can. No, you can't. It's not in your governing documents. It's not in our governing documents. I never agreed to give you that power. But my brother does it in his association. I go, yeah, your brother may do it in his association, and maybe he's acting within the scope of his authority, and maybe he isn't. But just because he's doing it doesn't mean you can do it.
That's true. However, it's like in our association, if the power is not specifically given to the board, our bylaws say the power is reserved for the members. So the board gets in, a rogue board member or two, and they do what's not within their scope, like what you're talking about, because it's not spelled out for them. They do it, and they get the attorney to back them up. And the attorney says, oh, yeah, you can do that because, and he twists words here or there.
Yes.
And then, so they're doing what they're not supposed to be doing with the sanction of an attorney. And once the attorney tells them they can do it, then you're no longer even covered by corporate law, because corporate law says if they follow the advice of an expert. So even though it's wrong advice, they're following it, and they're no longer responsible, so they can do what they want. That's part of the insidiousness of all of this.
Actually, Shelley, we had an attorney who said, yes, you can do it, although you are not on concrete legal foundation. So the board was doing it because they got the blessing from the attorney. I got on the board with another member, and the two of us looked at that, and we undid it. We said we do not have that power, because governing documents typically will give you the authority to make rules and regulations pertaining to the common area. And I have no problem with that. If the board is responsible for the common area and they don't want you to spit on it, then that's fine. You can have all the rules that you want. Enforcing that rule is, you know, you're going to have to follow obey the laws, but you can have all the rules pertaining to the common area, but you cannot make rules taking away people's rights.
Yes.
Property rights. So if it's not in the declaration, if it does not specifically say that, you know, the board has the power to decide what color your front door can be, then they don't have that authority. I don't care whether the 18 attorneys say, well, it sounds reasonable to me, but there's going to be a caveat. There's going to be something there that they're going to say to protect themselves, like you're not on legal. It sounds reasonable, so the board members who want to get away with it stop there.
The attorney
then protects himself by saying you're not on legal, concrete legal foundation.
Mm-hmm. So you have to read. What you did was the thing that's going to protect more members than anything else. You got on the board and you set it right. And that is going to help more homeowner associations than any other thing members can do. Right now we have a terrific board in Utah in our little association there. We've got some members there that want to protect other members, and they're undoing some really big wrongs that were done in the last few years in our association. But that's it, Shu. It's getting involved, getting on the board, and undoing the things that are not correct.
I can't spend my entire life sitting on the board to protect the homeowners.
I mean,
I know. You know, they're gonna have to step up to the plate. I didn't want to be on the board. I got on there. I fought. I got rid of a lot of things. I got off the board, and you know, it's back to square one. And you're going to have the same stupid people back on, the same power hungry morons,
right,
who are going to be trying to pull anything and everything they want. But
right.
The fact is, when you look at this, Shelley, it's not a workable system. It just doesn't work.
In the long term, it's not. I was talking to Dr. Solomon because he had sounded so discouraged about what's happening. He's been working so hard for so many years. And he said that he is discouraged, and that until we take the money out of it for the attorneys, we're going to be fighting these same battles again and again and again. And I think that he's right. And I think we need to be looking at how do we stop making this a cash cow.
You know what? You look at what's going on nationally now,
mm-hmm.
and you look at how the special interests, I mean, I always knew the special interests were there, but I never realized just how much power they had. And
yeah.
I think as American citizens, we really need to get the special interests out of it. You've got the special interests who go at the state legislatures, and they're getting all of these pro-HOA, anti-homeowner laws passed.
Yeah.
They have the money. They have full-time people who are sitting there just schmoozing with the legislators and
yeah.
buying them dinner and expensive gifts and contributing to their campaigns and doing everything. And so as horrible as the legislation is, they're voting for it because they've been
yeah.
bought.
Yes. Yeah. And many times they don't even really understand what's in the legislation. I've listened to our legislators in Utah present a law, and they don't even know what they're presenting.
Yeah, they have no idea.
No, they don't. And they say, we want to protect the homeowners, and that's why I'm introducing this law and putting it out on the floor. And so if you'll vote for it, it'll help protect our homeowners. And it does anything but. And he doesn't even know how to explain the law correctly. And I've seen that again and again.
You are so right. I've had legislators introduce their legislation and then call the special interest to explain what they've introduced.
That's exactly right.
It's like, wait a minute, dude. You don't know what you've introduced.
Well, they don't have any idea about the implications. We have a fantastic law in Utah right now. It was brought in a few years ago, where it says that a board shall not be compelled to enforce the CC&Rs if it's against the best interests of the association. And that sounds so good on paper. It is a good law if there were a way to enforce it. Because, see, what happens is these attorneys and these CAI-influenced attorneys come in and they scare board members.
Yeah.
They say, you have to enforce these CC&Rs. It's your fiduciary duty, and that's what you were voted to do. And so we must get them enforced in uniform, and if you don't enforce them all, you know, with this person right here, then the person down there is going to go against it also. And they actually scare the board members, and the board members think they have no choice. They think, well, it's our duty. We have to. That's what the attorney said. But this law says, no, it's not your duty to enforce it if it's not in everybody's best interest, and after you carefully consider it. If it's not going to work in this association, you cannot be compelled to do it. So, but then, what board member is going to go in and read this law and turn around and tell the attorney, no, we don't have to enforce it? They don't go in and read it.
The thing is that they have to read their declaration. I think it's the duty of every board member to read and know what's in the declaration. And I guarantee you that every declaration will say that the board may, not shall, enforce the provisions of this declaration, as may every homeowner. So if there's a stupid covenant out there that some drunken attorney put in when he was writing the covenants, I mean, some of them are so ridiculous. That, you know, you look at it and you go, I'm just not going to enforce that. I'm not that dumb and that stupid. But then if you have a homeowner who says, I want it enforced, what I say is, go ahead. You have the authority to take your neighbor to court.
Yes.
On your
yes,
dime, not mine. Not mine. I think it's stupid and I'm not going to do it. I don't have to do it. Here's the other thing that the attorneys will tell the board members. If you don't do it, then you will be sued personally by the homeowners.
Yes. It's,
there is an outside chance. You know, the odds aren't very high, but there is an outside chance that a homeowner might sue them. Because the homeowner wants them to get rid of her neighbor for her or him or whatever. But the fact is that board members are indemnified. It's not going to cost them anything. The association's going to pick up the tab. So, it's not, so stop being scared. Stop. You know,
that's exactly right. And it's not explained to them properly. They think, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose everything if they sue me personally. Well, you're insured and you're indemnified. And who it's going to cost is either the insurance company or the homeowners. So it's a bogus argument.
And unfortunately, the insurance companies don't give a damn anymore, because there was a point where you could contact an insurance company and say, by the way, you insure this association and the board is acting like a bunch of nutcases. And they would say, you get off the board or you stop doing that or we will drop you right now. Now the insurance companies don't care. You know, they just, there's something wrong. There's something so screwy, Shelley. I don't understand it. There's something so screwy, and it's the big money.
It's the big money, yeah. And so that, you just follow the money, that old adage, and it's so true. Follow the money. They're going to keep people agitated. They're going to keep things in court. They're going to go after homes. They're going to make it non-judicial so that it benefits the collection people and the collection attorneys. And it's shady, but it's money. It's big money that's in it. And Dr. Solomon is right. Until we stop feeding these attorneys money, we're going to have this problem, and it's going to continue to grow.
How do we stop the special interests? Because that's who's making the money. That's who has the money, because that's who's making the money. How do we stop the special interests?
We keep attacking it from different angles. forcing people to go to mediation or arbitration and not allowing be appealed.
No, that's not good. That's not good, and I'll tell you why that's not good. Because, again, you've got the special interests, Shelley. You've got to remember the special interests. Buy a tube of toothpaste. Buy anything you want, and by buying it in the fine print, it says you will not sue us, you will go to arbitration. And the reason they do that is because, and they'll, again, it's a sales technique, it's a sales job. They'll say, you can pick your arbitrator.
Mm-hmm.
So you think, oh, all right, you know, I don't get to pick my judge, I'll pick my arbitrator. I look into that. But what happens is the arbitrator, first of all, does not have to follow the law or the rules. He has to listen to both sides, and he makes a judgment.
Yeah.
And he awards something. Now, you as a homeowner are probably not going to go back to arbitration every week. The HOA probably will be there a whole lot more often. If you're an arbitrator and you're looking at increasing your business, you're going to find for the person who's going to be a better client. So arbitration.
Yeah, but I don't mean arbitration like that. I don't. A regular arbitration can cost more than court, and it can be just as inundated with motions and coming back and appeals. I mean, it can be just as bad or worse than court. I'm talking about the kind of arbitration that caps at $2,000. And where you can't appeal and have motions and cost money and have depositions. I'm talking about the limited work costs are contained and the whole process is contained. And I don't mean for $100,000 types of deals, but for the smaller ones.
Something like small claims court, where you go in, no attorneys involved.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you have a judge who's not getting paid by one party or the other.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
So let's make, you know, let's clarify that. And I have no problem with that, where you have people who actually know the law and can look at the governing documents and say, hey, guess what, association, you just don't have the authority to do that.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly where I think that we could be helped. Obviously, a lot of things would have to be worked out with it, but I think that there's some foundation for beginning that type of solution. Or like the amendments, if the board's going to sue anybody, that the neighbors have to agree. I don't want my board suing my neighbors without my consent. And so that takes money out of it, because you know neighbors aren't generally going to vote to sue another neighbor unless it's really egregious, you know, really outrageous. And so you take the money out of it. It's the money, Sue, just like what you said, it's the money. Any method we can come up with that stops the attorneys from having the power to appeal, people can't afford the risk. And so many of the homeowners don't have those kinds of resources, and so they sit back and they're quiet and they don't want to cause waves and they don't enforce their rights because they can't, and they know they can't against this big machine. And so you have to stop the big machine somewhere.
Yeah, we're back to fighting the special interests.
Yes.
And we're back to fighting the special interests. So, you know, we have to identify them, figure out who they are, and what kind of money they're making on that, and then try to get rid of them. Go with a system where nobody's going to make a dime on it.
That's right. Where nobody's going to make money on it. And then you're going to have a level platform to be working off of in these associations.
So I'm going to take you back to hoalawyer.org because we only have about 5 minutes left. And I noticed that you have different you have three different people who are involved with the website,
yes,
with different areas of expertise and knowledge.
Yes.
And there's you, and there's Adam. I can't think
Buck.
Of Buck. I was going to say mm-hmm. Blake, but Buck. And David Russell, who's
yes.
the manager. You also have a page that I think is just absolutely phenomenal. And that is a page where you have attorneys listed, attorneys who will represent homeowners.
Yes.
In every state. You've got the states, you don't have the attorneys.
Unfortunately, and that's what I want to ask your audience, anybody listening to this, if you know of homeowner-friendly attorneys who know HOA law, real estate law, please consider coming to this site and submitting their name, because we need more attorneys that are going to be looking out for our homeowners. And the list will grow. You know, every week I get another name or two, and we start checking them out. We make sure that they're not a member of the CAI, and that they'll represent owners in a fair manner. But we don't recommend these attorneys. People have to do their own research. We just want to make sure that they will consider representing homeowners in a fair manner, and that they understand HOA law. But everybody who's looking to pursue legal action has to understand the risks, do their own homework, and they have to research the attorneys, because they can get into a lot of trouble with a bad attorney, like you started off this interview. Attorneys that are just no good. They don't understand the HOA law or the issues.
I think that's a big downfall. And a lot of attorneys will take a case because mm-hmm. the homeowners are their clients.
Mm-hmm.
I've had calls from attorneys, Sue, I'm an attorney, I specialize in corporate law or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And my clients have been... These people have been my clients for the last 20 years, and I take care of all of their business.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're being sued by their HOA, and they want me to handle it. And I don't know beans about this.
Right.
How do I start? Where do I start?
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell them I'm not an attorney. I can't give you legal advice.
That's right.
But it's always good to start by reading the governing documents.
Right.
Read the governing documents very, very carefully and figure out what the association's responsibilities are and what they can and cannot do.
Yes.
And when you get to that point, then, you know, you should be able to figure out where to go with it. And then go to state statutes and, of course, look at other lawsuits, and especially the ones where the homeowners have won.
Yeah, exactly. And what points did they win on, and how did they present it to the court? Very, very important. But we want to give choices. We want to give choices to homeowners. So, like I say, if there's any advocates or homeowners listening who knows some attorneys, please go to the website, hoalawyer.org, and go to the directory of attorneys. And if you don't see the attorney that you know listed in the state, submit their name. There's a little form there. It's very easy to do. And let us increase this list.
Well, I think also, even if there is a name there for your state, states are big. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, your attorney may be in a different city.
That's correct.
Or a different part of the state. And so just keep submitting their names, right?
Yes, please.
So you don't mind having 300, 400, 500 attorneys per state, right?
Oh, that's what we want. Wouldn't that be great?
And now what we need to do is we need to come up with a model legislation or a model something where you can just gut the power of the associations.
That's correct.
And then start living in a community, right?
That's correct. And the solutions are coming. It's slow but sure. I was talking this morning with Adam Buck about starting a resource. This is the kind of legislation you want to get in your state. This is the kind of thing that you want in your governing documents to get passed. And creating that resource so people can go in there and say, oh, this is how I would do it. Okay, this is how I would do it. Like the one association in Alaska, don't have a meeting for 20 years. That guts them pretty much for a while.
I love it. I love it. But it'll come back in 20 years. They'll be back. Shelly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Shu. Always a pleasure.
I'm glad you got your phone working. And keep those daisies growing. You never know where you might want to stick one next.
Thank you, Shu. I'll talk to you again soon.
Take care. Bye.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine. And enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.